listening to the Wesley Seminary Podcast. Your host today is Dr. Aaron Perry, Associate Professor of Pastoral Theology and Leadership.
How did you realize that you were a person of influence? Can you think about the face of the person that comes to mind when you first realized I'm responsible to them? What I do and how I lead will influence them. Was it a word that was spoken into you? Was it seeing somebody lead and you thought, whenever I have a position of influence, I am not going to lead like that? Maybe the circumstances were different, but maybe you can think back to when it was that you discerned you are a leader. In today's episode, we talk about some of that experience. We talk about when somebody realized they were a leader. And that somebody was Dr. Angie Ward. Dr. Ward is the author of I Am a Leader, When Women Discover the Joy of Their Calling. Dr. Ward brings over 30 years of ministry experience to her roles as a leader, writer, and teacher. She currently serves as the assistant director of the Doctor of Ministry program at Denver Seminary. She's the author of a number of books, including I Am a Leader and When the Universe Cracks, Living as God's People in Times of Crisis, due out in October. Angie loves running, basketball, humor, and movies. She and her husband, Dave, have two young adult sons and one very spoiled beagle. In today's episode, we talk about some of the differences between men and women in leadership. And we talk about some of the differences between men and women in followership, how they follow and what they might need from their leaders. We talk about how men and women can collaborate well and work together well in leadership. If you're in a position of leadership, pastor, parent, professor, teacher, principal, whatever it is, then today's episode, I think, can illuminate some of the aspects of your leadership and help you think about the unique situation, personality, and gifts and experiences of those who are taking your lead and following after you. Stay tuned for a word from our sponsor and then enjoy the podcast.
We are Wesley and you belong here.
My name is Victoria Borum and I am Wesley.
I'm Lenny Lucetti and I am Wesley.
My name is Chris and guess what? I am Wesley.
Hi, I'm Tina Shapit and I am Wesley.
We recognize this beautiful diversity that the Lord has called together that is Wesley.
My name is Corey Merritt, and I am Wesley.
I am Wayne Brown, and I am Wesley.
I am Colleen Durr, and I belong here. You belong here too, because we are Wesley.
Welcome to the Wesley Seminary Podcast. Angie, it's great to have you with us.
Thanks so much. Great to be with you.
You're the author of a number of books. The one that came across my desk most recently is I Am a Leader, subtitled When Women Discover the Joy of Their Calling. It's published by Nav Press, and we're going to talk about leadership today. Feel free, of course, to draw from some of the themes of calling in the book, but I really wanted to have your voice speak more broadly about leadership. So I like to study leadership. I teach leadership as well, so it's great to interact with another leadership colleague. Maybe I'd start by asking the question, how did you become interested in leadership?
Great starter question. So I started out, my background was in youth ministry. And so that was my degree in college, undergrad, and then was doing high school ministry at a church in Minnesota. And then realized what I really love doing is working with the adult leaders and had a heart for training, developing leaders. And so kind of through that, around the same time, leadership became kind of a buzzword among ministry circles. And so like, it really wasn't a thing as much. And so I think my interest kind of merged with kind of an explosion of leadership awareness and books and stuff like that. And so as I was training leaders and realizing that I am a leader, you know, which is the title of my book, and I realized, oh, that's what this is. And this is a thing. And so that then led to me studying, eventually going on for a doctorate in ministry leadership.
One of the things that drew me to the book is that it's one specifically aimed at women and women who are leading. I've done some work with C.S. Lewis. One of my recent projects was on Lewis. And one of the things that I've tried to use as a category out of Lewis is a category of imagination. And I like to say, I think men and women have different kinds of imaginations, different ways of seeing the world and then processing the world and kind of how we are initially interested in interacting with the world. Now, it's not always the case, right? You can have similarities, but it's a helpful category for me to think about how men and women differ, especially in their leadership. I wanted to ask you, how do you see men and women differing in leadership? Or maybe I'd say, do they, right? Do you see a lot of similarities or are there differences? And maybe you'd talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I think there are differences. I think, you know, I want to, I guess, start with a point of clarification. I don't think there are any differences or limitations as far as giftedness or calling. So when I talk about differences, I think it's in the way that our leadership works out. I think calling for men, a lot of times, and this affects their leadership, it's a lot of times more of a ladder, kind of a sequential kind of thing. And for women, in the way we process things, it's more of a garden, and that we tend to different parts at different seasons of life. And I think that also influences how men and women lead and how they see things. In fact, I think Harvard Business Review or Harvard Business School just did a study a few months ago on even how women see things differently, often bring greater empathy, some greater relational skills. Men tend to be, and again, these are general tendencies. They're not meant to be these broad, you know, categorizations, but in general tend to be more focused on sometimes the task and stuff. Women sometimes bring a little more relational intelligence. And so, but, you know, obviously every individual is different. And so a lot of it is just how our personalities are. And so our leadership is just colored by how we're created and how we're wired. And so then that's personality and gifting and passions and all those things put together.
One of the things that I appreciate about just the field of leadership and thinking about it is that leadership is always contextual, right? It's contextual right. to culture. It's contextual to a time. And there are things that are happening in times that are outside of our control, right? There are things that are happening socially that the seeds of which were planted, you know, 50 years ago, 40 years ago, you know, even maybe early on in our lifetimes, or maybe before some of current leaders were even born. Now, the reason I think that it's important to mention that is that men and women often have different experiences, right? There's no culture that doesn't have certain proclivities for men and women and what we are supposed to do or not supposed to do. And those can be helpful and misguided and all those things, right? There's complexity. I find it so helpful to realize that the unique experiences that a person has gone through, mixed in with their personality, mixed in with their relationships, mixed in with the relationship with God, when we're thinking in a Christian worldview and mindset, that all of those can be really important and used by God mm-hmm. to make a leader especially pertinent, right? Specifically appointed to a given time. So that the time doesn't disqualify people from leadership, and their experiences, their personality doesn't disqualify. It might uniquely position them and make them used by God in such a time as this, as the biblical phrase goes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, God doesn't waste anything. And so, you know, an example, just a couple of weeks ago when we had our doctoral students coming in here to Denver Seminary, I was coordinating intensives for them for 2 weeks and leading that. And I was telling my husband, who would have thought that when I was a high school program director, you know, like directing camps, that those skills and those experiences and what I learned about leading people in those times, you know, and would help me now. And just all the experiences, not just our experience as far as skills, but who we become. I mean, we lead from who we are, not just more than what we do, you know? And so all of that shaping, you know, and those experiences shape who we are then as leaders. And you're right. There's times where it's like, for such a time as this, you were meant for this place, for this time. And you may not have known God was preparing you for that 30 years ago, but someday, you know, you go, wow, okay, for all that now, for this time.
We've talked about men and women in leadership and how we might differ in leadership. I'd love to ask you about followers and followership. That's a growing aspect of leadership studies, yeah. Second tier leadership and followership. Do men and women follow differently? Do they need different things from their leaders?
Well, that's a great question. I haven't read a bunch of the literature on it or done research, but I mean, my automatic answer would be, well, yeah. I mean, because if we are different, I mean, I would say, men vary from each other and also women vary each other, but also men and women. And you know, you talk about like situational leadership theory is, and management is knowing what your followers need and that those who you are leading and how they are motivated, what they respond to. I think I see that. I'm a sports fan. And so I see that in some of the best coaches, and they know what each of their players needs, you know, and how to bring out the best in the people that they're working with. And so, you know, I don't know there's a blanket thing that women need more than men. I've seen those situations where I've seen a leader who the men respond better to them than the women do. And so there's got to be some stuff there with gender and what they need. I don't know that I could give any definitive specifics. Maybe you have some more ideas of that, actually.
Well, no, it's actually, I put it on the question.
Yeah. I was like, man, I'm intrigued by the question.
I'd like to think about it. Of course, I learned this from my dad, and my dad was an excellent leader. He was in education, and he was always finding the unique ways that people just needed a leader in a time, right? Like, what did they need from him? What did they maybe need and didn't realize they needed from him in terms of to help get the best of them, to see them succeed maybe down the road, or to set a culture that was going to allow other people to succeed and thrive in the midst of it. And my dad had a friend who coached in professional hockey, and he had a great line. He said, "Ellard, the key is to know which of my players needs a pat on the back and which of them needs a push in the back." You know, maybe that wasn't the exact phrase, but who needs that kind of caring encouragement in the moment, and who needs some kind of accountability in the moment? And if it's coming from a person of character, then those aren't going to be radically different things, but they can be tailored to the follower, right? And what they need and in what moment. And I recall I'm trying to think of who it was. There was a leadership conference I was attending, and he was illustrating his point with another professional coach. And he was asking the coach about the personal interest he takes in his players. And he said, "My players get paid, you know, $5 million. I'm a little bit wrong.
More than us.
They get paid $5 million a year. They don't need my personal touch and attention." And the guy's like, "What a missed opportunity." As if that player is able to check everything that's going on in his life when he comes into the arena. Now, maybe they can for a bit, but not totally, right? And so that kind of personal attention, I think, is something, maybe it's helpful that there's no pat answer to it. It's always the opportunity of the leader to get to know the people that they're leading and see where they are in the moment.
Yeah, and I think that's a shift that we're thankfully seeing. You know, 100 years ago, leadership theory and studies were all about maximizing productivity. I mean, it was very much kind of, as industrialization, how can we put in input A into the person to get output B, and maximize that. And so thankfully we've moved far away from that and going, okay, how do we tap into each person's, not just how do we maximize what their output is, but how do we tap into what their deepest longings and what humanity's deepest needs are, and for being valued and being seen and those types of things. So I think that's been a helpful, very helpful shift in the last, several decades.
One of the things that I appreciate that you talked about in your book, I Am a Leader, you have a section on marriage and the relationships between men and women. You talk about how relationships are so vital to the leadership action and the follower action, and that being part of the mix that's going together. One of my frustrations is when we either create or we fuel an unnecessary opposition between men and women, right? It's like, if we're going to have an identity, it's not simply alongside one, it's like against another, right? It's in opposition to them. And that frustrates me. It doesn't ring true with me in my experience. It certainly isn't how I want my marriage to work. When I've been on teams with men and women, I don't want us to thrive by opposition internally. And I never got that spirit from your book, right? I'm so often seeing, how do we collaborate? How do we work together? How do we take into account how somebody is different from us in the best sense of the word in order to thrive? So can you talk to us a little bit about when men and women are working well alongside each other in leadership, how can they do that, right? What goes into the mix to make sure that women and men are collaborating well?
I think one of the keys is to reframe the conversation from not being focused just on power, because I think when you focus on power, it becomes this zero-sum game in that, Aaron, if you give me some, then you lose some, And so I think partnership isn't concerned with like power in that there's a limited number. It's like, it's more concerned with how are you making each person, bringing out the best and the most in them. And in that way, then there's no diminishment. It's not about making one side weak so the other becomes strong. It's about how can we all be the strongest we can be. And that's what makes the collaboration or the partnership the strongest it can be. And so really focusing, changing that conversation and that view from power to partnership. And I think, when you put power in there, it just becomes such a fear-driven thing. It's more like fear of losing instead of being more of a centered thing of trying to build up those around you.
One of the verses that we try to repeat frequently in our home, and it was given to us as part of like a deck of verses to memorize, was be kind one to another and build each other up. And how humbling it is whenever my kids like bring that to me and they're reminding me of that. Yeah. There's a non-negotiable component of people working in tandem and both thriving, and that's humility, right? There has to be a component of letting the other person shine, letting them thrive, seeing where they are better, giving up something that's for the good of the team. You can't have people thrive in tandem and in partnership for very long without humility being a key component for both parties.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that comes out of our own security or insecurity. And so if we are insecure about who we are, then we're not going to want somebody else to be greater than we are, because that plays into our own insecurity. So I think the more we do our own emotional work, I guess, and be aware of what are those things in us that are making us, like, why am I jealous when they're succeeding? Or why am I frustrated? You know, and where is that coming from? You know, and so that we can truly come open-handed, you know, and you know, listeners can't see, but I'm just very much doing this very open-handed posture instead of this kind of fist clenched kind of thing and very protective.
You mentioned the inner condition of the leader. I'm trying to find who the quote was. I think it was Bill O'Brien. That's the name that's coming to mind. I can't really position it, but the quote said something like this: the success of an intervention depends on the inner condition of the intervener. And you think about leadership as
that's
having
great
intervening yeah actions. You know, there's a deep center mm-hmm from which that has to come. And if it only comes from about a 1-inch depth in the person, then it's, if it's effective, then it might be because there was an overreaction, and then its effect is going to have a significant double-edged sword to it. It's probably going to fade away, or it's going to need that kind of overreaction over and again, which just yeah creates such a toxic culture, right? You can't achieve a desired effect through an overreaction and not expect it to have negative consequences at some point.
Yeah. And you're talking, you know, you're actually touching on some stuff. I don't know if you've read any of Edwin Friedman and kind of the concept of non-anxious or less anxious presence, you know. And so, you know, another quote I just heard is, leaders bring the weather. And so what is the climate that we're creating by what's the energy or the anxiety that we bring within us? And Steve Cuss is doing a lot of work on that with managing leadership anxiety as well. And how do you come as a calm, centered presence into whatever situation it is?
Joining us today is Dr. Angie Ward. Angie is the author of I Am a Leader: When Women Discover the Joy of Their Calling. Let me read a little bit from the book, and then I'd like to bring a question to you, Angie. You sure describe some of your background and the church culture in which you grew up, and you're appreciative of it. And you mentioned the different opportunities that you were given as well. And yet you were, part of your view of leadership was shaped in that culture as well. And you write this: all of this did affect my confidence and sense of self, however, as I began to question whether my leadership was a gift or a fatal feminine flaw. I asked God to help me be more meek and gentle. I tried to blend in, to not take charge. And yet, even when I went out of my way to not lead something, people usually ended up looking to me for clarity or direction. You go on to say, I vividly remember the moment of clarity when I wrote in my journal, I am a leader. From that day on, I committed to the Lord that I would not bury the gifts or calling he had given to me. Mm-hmm. I'd like maybe to channel that moment, that experience. And maybe there's somebody listening in that kind of identifies with it. Could be a woman, could be a man who's just not been seen as a person of influence. And yet maybe their eyes are starting to open up to how they are a person of influence. They're starting to see people to whom they are accountable in the best sense for what kind of life they're going to live and what kind of posture, what kind of demeanor, what kind of actions they're going to take. From that experience that was so formative to you, talk to that person who's just maybe on the cusp of realizing that they are a leader.
You know, one of the things I had to do, and I continually have to do, and I would encourage you to do, is there's so many voices telling us who we should be and what we should do or what we can and can't do. And I had been listening so long to those voices, and that's what I began to think, there was something wrong with who God had created me to be. And so, you know, some of you may have that, and you're sitting there confused, partly maybe because you're listening to other voices and maybe your own internal doubts and voices. And so I encourage you, tune out those voices, really tune into the voice of God through the Holy Spirit. And that's what it was for me, saying, God said, why are you trying to be something else when I made you to be this? The more we spend time tuning our ears to the Spirit, the more confident I think we hear those whispers of, no, this is who you are. And I think probably everyone who's listening has had those moments where you just feel like you are deeply connected to the Creator and listening to that one true voice of who God has created you to be.
Joining us today has been Dr. Angie Ward. Angie is the author of I Am a Leader: When Women Discover the Joy of Their Calling, published by NAV Press. Angie, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today. I certainly appreciate it.
So great to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. You make conversations like this possible. The Wesley Seminary podcast exists to introduce topics and resources for fruitful ministry. Trust we have done just that today. If you agree, I'd ask you to like and subscribe, share this episode around on the different platforms that you use. Thanks to Connor for his production work. Certainly appreciate the work that you do to make this sound better than it otherwise would and to help us get the podcast rolling on a weekly basis. Thanks again, listeners. Thanks again, Angie. Appreciate you contributing to this episode today and trust you all to have a great day.
Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the name Wesley Seminary.